Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
TRE in the afternoon, presented by Hannah Murray.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Women Talk on TRE in the afternoon. With me in the studio today is Lena Hodgkins, Sheila Mellor and Cookie Baudet. Hello, ladies.
Hi.
Oh, it's lovely to have you all with us. So there's an article here talking about breakfast. My relationship with breakfast has changed quite a lot over the years, considering I used to do the breakfast show and now I'm in the afternoon. So I have breakfast a lot more now than I did when I did the breakfast show, because I was up a lot earlier then. So it's all kind of, it makes a difference, I think, what your working day is like. So I'm interested to know what you ladies do about breakfast. It says here, the article, breakfast is already said to be the most important meal of the day, but experts now believe that eating it at the crack of dawn could help you live longer too. Having it by 7 a.m. could boost life expectancy, but waiting until 10 a.m. could put you in an early grave. Dramatic. We used to that, aren't we? So what do we think? Breakfast. Do you have breakfast, Lena?
No, I never eat breakfast. The thought of putting food in my mouth as soon as I get up is absolutely no. Never ever have breakfast and never have done.
Really? Ever. Never ever?
No, never.
Wow. So what would be the first kind of time of the day that you'll have something to eat?
Today, it's now with this nice apple pie that I've just been given.
That's the first thing you've eaten today?
Yeah, I don't eat much in the day. I like a nice evening meal and a bit of chocolate after that. And I don't really eat much in the day. I drink coffee, I drink loads of water in the day. But the morning to get up and eat, I just couldn't face it.
That's really good for you, isn't it? That's intermittent fasting, it's called. Yeah. But that's impressive, not eating till 5 o'clock-ish. Mm. That's really good.
Unless someone put a bit of cake in me any time of day, and then I'll eat it.
Fair enough, fair enough.
I've never had breakfast either.
No?
Even as a child, I can remember my mum chasing me up the street with a piece of toast in her hand saying, just have a bite of toast, you know, before you go to school. So I used to go to school early because I used to train. I was a swimmer, you know, I used to train. So I'm like Lena, I only eat about this time. That's the first thing I've eaten since yesterday lunchtime.
Gosh, I'm starting to feel embarrassed now. What about you, Kiki?
I never used to have breakfast as a child. Just going to school, get up and, you know, start the walk to school. But now it really depends what I have or have not eaten the night before, or whether I've actually had a drink the night before, and then I might fancy a sandwich. But today I've had a bacon sandwich for breakfast, I've had lunch, and I'm going to have dinner tonight. So but it's very interesting, the word breakfast, because when you actually break it down, it's break fast. So you're breaking the fast from the night that you've been sleeping, and you're putting energy in your body. But there's also a lot of information out now about actual fasting, and not even intermittent fasting, not eating for 4 or 5 days to let your body and your cells rejuvenate.
Wow, I don't know if I could do that.
I've done a 3-day fast.
Have you?
Yeah, it's the first day I found really easy, no problem at all. The second day, when it got to about 6-7 o'clock in the evening, you're starving and it's in your mind because that's what time I would eat. So I'd done some ironing or just like went past my food time to eat, and then it's fine. And then the next day you could eat at 7 o'clock, and so you're just waiting for 7 o'clock, but you'd only could have something light, like some porridge or something like that. But it's, yeah, it's great. If you get your right mindset in, and it is like, you know, this fasting is meant to be more good for you than eating breakfast at the crack of dawn.
Yeah. Wow, it makes sense, doesn't it? I mean, it depends not only what you're doing with your day working-wise, but also exercise-wise. You know, if you're doing a lot of exercise, then you need to eat certain things for fuel, don't you? You know, having protein and things like that.
Slow-burn carbohydrates.
Yeah, can be important.
If you're running, for example.
Well, yes, that's my excuse. I'm running, so I
need cake in the morning.
The right foods, that's what I need to remind myself. Yes. This made me chuckle, talking about the perfect place to live. So this was a new poll aimed at people in their 30s, aged under 35, what they would look for in a perfect home, the must-haves. They were saying the must-haves are a home office, ensuite bathrooms and a veggie patch in the garden. It must be near good restaurants and takeaways. They're all must-haves for homeowners aged under 35. A sense of privacy is also the top priority for a perfect home. I think that's so bizarre.
I get most of it, but the vegetable patch, maybe not.
No.
When they want to be near bars and restaurants.
Yeah, it's bizarre, isn't it? I mean, surely a vegetable patch, you can make that yourself. Yeah. I mean, you don't need that
We're
to be...
We're not talking like the old allotments here, are we? You know, when you trek down the road and have a half an acre.
Yeah.
I think it's changed a lot because of COVID. People are looking for different things.
Mm. Yeah, people are doing a lot more in the home, aren't they? And in the garden and things. Yeah. I'm just trying to think what I would have
And
wanted.
A home office is like, who would have thought of that, you know?
Yeah, again, that'll be because of things in the last in the last couple of years.
I think it's brilliant that young people are looking for property that has got a vegetable patch and they want to grow their own fruit and veg. I think it's absolutely fantastic.
Mm.
And it's so satisfying when you plant something and it grows and you pick it and you eat it. It's amazing. So I really, really encourage it. I don't understand why they need that if you said they're by restaurants and bars. But just going in the garden and picking your own fruit and veg and cooking it and eating it is so satisfying. So I encourage it.
Yeah. No, it is a good thing. You just need to be good at looking after it.
Mm,
and
yeah,
that's been my downfall over the years. Because it's exciting to do when you buy it and you plant it and you're like, yeah, all proud of yourself. And then you let it die.
Or the pests come and eat it all.
That also happens, yeah, definitely. I need to be in more control of watering things in the garden. That's definitely a problem. This made me chuckle and also made me feel a bit concerned. It's a long way before the official UK retirement age of 66, but a survey has found that Britons expect to be able to slow down their lives at the age of 43, after a fast-paced existence for 25 years. The poll of 2,000 people found the average adult gets just 7.5 hours to themselves every week, a little over an hour a day. This is when they're not doing work, chores, or ticking off a to-do list.
When I was in my 40s, I tell you, that would be great if I managed to get an hour a day to myself.
Yeah. So you definitely weren't slowing down at the age of 43.
Not until about 65 did I start to slow down slightly.
Really? Wow. Yeah, I mean, I'm not thinking of... I haven't reached 43 yet, but I'm not thinking of slowing down either. I feel like I'm not just like getting going, but, you know, there's like lots of things going on and things I want to do and, yeah.
I think 43 is far too young. I think you're in your prime.
Mm. I agree.
You know, you still want to go out, you still want to go to clubs, you still want to go to bars, you still want to... in restaurants, and a lot of it's about time management because you can fit in a lot more than an hour a day free time if you manage your time. But it depends on your circumstances. If you're 43 with 5 kids at home, you're not going to have any time.
No.
If you're 43 and single, then you manage your time, you've got loads.
yeah. It is prioritising. You need to prioritise your time.
It'd be interesting to see what age they... did the survey for, because it's saying by 43 or 45.
Yeah.
So they must have asked people that haven't reached that age to say that. So I can see with obviously all these, you know, young people now on TikTok and Instagram and making money that way. And then obviously with cryptocurrencies now, a lot of people making a lot of money. So maybe they feel that they've put all their effort into that. And by the time they get to 42 and 45, they actually want to enjoy and reap the rewards of their work. But yeah, I mean, I agree with the ladies, 42, 45, that's far too young.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to keep active. You've got to keep your brain going.
I guess it's to do with the fact, as you say, when you're younger, I mean, when I was at school, I guess thinking of being in my 40s would have seemed old.
Yeah.
But then, of course, when you get to your 40s...
So young.
Exactly. Exactly. So you're always kind of looking forward.
And when you get to your 70s, it's still young.
Exactly. When you get to your 60s, it's still young.
Yeah, definitely.
It's about mindset.
Absolutely it is. Well, you two are shining example of that, definitely. The pile of ironing apparently is good for your health. Doing the vacuuming, washing up and ironing can often seem like thankless tasks, but it turns out that household chores might be the key to staying healthy in old age. A study has found that over 65s who spend lots of time on housework have better physical strength and are mentally sharper and have greater protection against falls.
I'd love to know who wrote that article.
Yeah.
I'm doomed there as well as an early grave. Because
oh, no.
What's an iron?
You don't iron?
No.
No, I don't either, actually. I specifically don't buy clothes that need to be ironed. No.
Oh, God, I have to iron everything.
Really?
Cases, sheets, everything. I don't mind ironing.
Okay.
But the problem is, with any of those chores, you do them all, and I don't mind a bit of housework, but you do them all, it's all lovely. And then you have ironing again the next day or whatever, because it's a never ending. That's the only thing
soul
that I
destroying.
Find. Yeah, it's like you're washing, you clear your washing basket, and then the next day you've got washing again. And so it doesn't go away.
Yeah.
So, but I like, you know, think, right, okay, I've got all my ironing. I never bring my laundry in to put somewhere. I only bring it in to iron to put away. So
okay.
I leave
that's
it outside. And I've always done that. I think it's because I haven't got a lot of space. So rather than having a pile on the bed in the spare room,
It grows and grows until you take it to the ironer.
Yeah.
No, I just do it and put it away.
Oh, well done.
Yeah. Very impressive.
See, I buy clothes that you body iron, so you put them on. And the heat of your body irons your clothes.
Yeah.
I hate it with a vengeance. I find it so boring, but I completely get people that iron their bedding because it looks absolutely beautiful when the bed's made, and all the pillowcases are ironed and the quilts ironed. It looks stunning. But no, it's just, for me, it's just a waste of time. It's
yeah,
a waste
it does look
of
nice.
Time.
I just can't be bothered.
Yeah, exactly.
I just take it to the cleaners, get them to iron it.
Yeah, funnily enough, I used to. Before COVID, I took all of our bedding to the dry cleaners. But through COVID, when we couldn't, I obviously was doing it myself, and then just thought, well, I might as well carry on saving money and doing it myself. But I don't iron it, whereas they did iron it. So I just try and keep it in the tumble dryer for the minimal amount of time, and then fold it. Ah, but the only problem I do have is folding fitted sheets. Actually possible?
There is a knack.
Is there?
There is a knack. I used to have a Filipino cleaner a long time ago, and I don't know how she'd done it, but it was amazing.
Wow. I thought you were going to give us a tip then.
No, I used to try and undo it and think, how did she do this? Yeah. It's just incredible. But I only iron the top of it.
There'll be a YouTube video, won't there?
I think you fold the corners in.
Right.
First of all, and then the top bit, so you haven't got the elastic bit, and then you fold it. But I'll have to try.
Okay.
But I used to have a cleaner that used to come in every Friday, and she did everything. Ironing, cleaning the windows, every single thing. But since, obviously, during COVID, we didn't have her. And since then, we haven't had her back because it's, one, saving money.
Yeah.
And two, I'm capable, and so is my husband. So my husband actually does quite a lot of the cleaning himself now. So I've got my own little cleaner at home.
I've just got dirty windows.
Yeah, exact same. I wonder how many cleaners have been put out of work since COVID, because we used to have one every 2 weeks, and now it's like once a month or once every couple of months, like just for like a special occasion as opposed to something regularly.
There must be loads, because many people had cleaners.
Yeah.
And then obviously COVID, that couldn't have them. And then I think, you know, people's work was up and down, so don't have them back because you need to save the money, and you're more than capable of doing it yourself.
Yeah.
And so just get back into that habit of doing it yourself without the cleaner. Unfortunately.
Yeah. I feel like I should get mine back now. I feel bad. I'm convinced myself that that's the reason I'm doing it, to be a good... I'm doing it for their benefit.
Absolutely.
Not for my own. We better take a break. We'll be back the other side.
Hannah Murray on TRE in the afternoon.
Good afternoon. It is 20 past five. You're listening to Women Talk. And with me in the studio today is Lena Hodgkins, Sheila Meller and Cookie Baudet. There's an article here talking, which I don't really get. I was reading it thinking, what? This is so weird. Vain people with big egos and a sense of entitlement have poorer visual memories, according to a study. They may struggle to remember faces and objects because of the way they focus on themselves. I've never realised there was a connection between the two. Anyone going to admit that they're not good with faces?
I always remember faces. I don't remember names.
Right,
me too. You know, you get people come up to you and say, hi, how are you? And you think, hi, how are you? And they said, do you remember me? And I said, yeah, I remember your face. And then it's like, well, I have no idea what your name is.
Yeah.
But I think that is an age thing. I think you just slow up a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, you're the same, Sheila.
I'm the same, absolutely. I remember faces and I see people walking towards me and I know them. And then I get panicky if I've got to introduce them to somebody because I know, yes, I'm just not going to pull their name out.
Yes, I often, I'm thinking whether it is an age thing because that never used to happen to me. I was always really good with faces and names. And now sometimes that happens. And if I'm with someone and then I don't introduce, I'll kind of whisper to them, I'm sorry I didn't introduce you, it's because I can't remember their name.
I do the intro the other way around, so the person I'm with, I'd say, oh, this is Hannah, and then let them say, and I'm so-and-so.
Yeah,
and oh, that's who it is.
Yeah, I've done that before as well, but sometimes they look at you expecting you to say, and this is Sheila. I'm standing there. Oh, embarrassing.
I'm okay, I think, with faces and names, because I have to remember a lot of people's names for my job that I'm in.
Because
obviously I'm interacting with people every single day, so I'm not too bad. Husband's terrible. He's
really,
really bad. But yeah, I'm not too bad. But I do think it's, I just think your brain just stops absorbing stuff after a certain amount of time. I mean, it's like before, you know, we had mobile phones, you could recite 10 to 15 telephone numbers off the top of your head.
Yeah.
Now try and remember your own mobile number. You know, it's just, I think it's just habits that we
because
get into.
You don't need to.
Exactly.
So you don't try to.
It's so weird, all of that. I still remember phone numbers from my childhood, my parents' phone number, my grandparents' number, but I do not know my husband's mobile number because I've never dialed it.
No.
I put it into my phone years ago, and I just press his name.
Yeah.
I never have to. And everyone will be like that, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have a clue what his number is.
I remember my childhood home phone number.
Yeah.
Which is weird.
Really?
But again, I know my own mobile number, but I don't know anybody else's at all. Because, like you say, you don't dial it anymore.
And every so often I think about this and think that this could cause a problem in some kind of emergency. You know, it's important to write them down somewhere. Because if I lost my phone, I wouldn't be. When I've left my phone at home on a certain occasion, I thought, oh, what am I going to do? And then I think, Facebook. And I contact my husband through Facebook. So there is another way, but you know, in general, I don't know my parents' phone number and I don't know my husband's number.
It's mad, isn't it?
I used to pride myself when I was ahead that I knew the name of every child in the school.
Oh, wow. All 360.
And they used to test me every now and again in assembly. I used to have to go along and it used to be a bit nerve-wracking just in case I did lose one of the names, because that poor child would be like, devastated.
Yeah, can you imagine?
Oh, wow. But happen?
No, I never forgot. I never forgot a child's
name. That's amazing.
I used to forget
Sheila.
Teachers' names all the time, but I used to say, Mrs. But the kids, I always remembered.
Wow, that's seriously impressive. There's an article here which I'm really apprehensive to talk about, but we've spoken about it off air and decided amongst us that it's okay to do. It's a really interesting one that I thought was quite shocking, actually, for what will be apparent once I start talking about it. So we've all heard of wokeness and people kind of going over the top in terms of political correctness and things like that. So there's a woke row going on about in inverted commas, racist pub name. A row has broken out over the renaming of a 17th century pub called the Black Bitch Tavern. I feel so uncomfortable saying this on the radio. This is because of its supposed racist connotations. Locals are threatening to boycott the pub if brewery bosses get their way and change it to the Black Hound. They're condemning the move as an example of wokery. They say that the Black Bitch name comes from local legend and is simply a description of a fabled female dog. The town's coat of arms features the dog, there are statues in her honour, and locals even proudly call themselves Black Bitches. I can't believe how many times I'm saying this. I feel so uncomfortable. There's a pub regular who said, "It's daft. You just need to check the history of the town to see that it's not offensive. It is a black female dog. It's got nothing to do with race or slavery."
Well, it's really strange because they're saying that it's race and they're saying it's called the Black Bitch at the moment, and yet they're going to change it to the Black Hound. So the black's still there.
Yeah.
It's the bitch that's gone, which is the feminist bit.
Yeah.
So it's a really odd article.
It is. I thought that. What do you think, Cookie?
I think it's very strange. And at the end of the day, the dog is black.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're not going to call it the really, really, really dark brown dog pub, are they?
No.
The dog is black. But I think what's happened in society now is too many people are jumping on this bandwagon of racism when this has got nothing to do with racism. Nothing.
Totally agree.
This is about a dog and the name of a pub. And, you know, I personally feel that society has gone a bit loopy and people just have to put their two penneth worth in at everything. I mean, I'm Asian origin, I'm brown. I'm not offended that pub is called the Black Hound because the dog is black and the dog is a hound.
Mm.
I would not go to that pub just because it's got the word black in it.
Mm.
So, and it's really strange because a lot of these people that are changing things, they're actually white.
Yeah.
And they're not even of any kind of ethnic background.
Mm.
But I think they're becoming too PC about it now. Just leave things alone.
Yeah. But do we think, as Sheila said, it's the word two words together, isn't it? If it was called the Black Dog, I don't think anyone or maybe they would. I don't know whether anyone would pick up on it. If I was driving through Scotland and I saw that pub, I'd go, "Oh my goodness, I can't believe the pub is called that." I would. Mm. I think that would be a normal reaction. But it's the two words together.
Yeah.
It's not the word black at all. No. Even though I there's a picture of said black dog on the pub, so on the sign for the pub, so straight away you'd go, "Oh wow," but even so it would seem quite shocking, I think, and that's not because I'm woke, just because, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think because of the word black and then the word bitch, I think people, it is shocking to see that. And you're totally right, they're changing it to Black Hound. You know,
the black's still there.
Yeah, the black's still there, so what is this really about?
Yeah.
But is it about the word bitch. Also bitch? Mm. Because it's not a word that's a nice word.
No.
However, back in the 17th century, and even amongst dog people today, they won't say, "Is your dog female?" They say, "Is it a bitch?"
Yeah, and that's totally...
And it's totally normal,
yeah.
And going back, the dog is black.
Mm.
And it's obviously a female dog, so that's why it's a bitch.
Exactly.
Because all female dogs were called bitches.
Yeah.
And it's just wokeness gone crazy, because when they come out with these articles, it actually incites racism and all of that, which is not necessary.
Mm.
The pub is called the Black Bitch because it's a black female dog.
Yeah.
Leave one alone.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a descriptive.
Mm. Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. Interesting. This is an article by author Lynn Truss, who wrote a best-selling book in 2003 called Eats, Shoots and Leaves, which was all about grammar and how we spell things. And yes, because it sounds weird, but it's self-explanatory, kind of, if you know the book. And there's a piece in the paper called The One Lesson I've Learned from Life, and it's famous people or successful people who talk about things that they've learned in life. And she says, avoid fame. It's a terrible trap. she gives examples of why that's a thing. It got me thinking about how many young people, when asked what they want to be when they grow up, say famous, and how the idea of being famous is supposedly this desirable thing that brings you love and money and adoration, and it's like the best thing ever. And just thought it was an interesting subject to talk about. Well, you've experienced a bit, Lena, haven't you?
I have experienced fame, or a very small bit of fame, shall I say. And when you go onto the TV, even though you've been told of what to expect and everything, you're not expecting to that level, as in that you can't walk along the street without someone asking you for a picture. You could be eating and they're taking pictures of you without asking, and this all goes over social media, and it's about, God, I look awful, but there's nothing you can do about it because they've already posted it.
Yeah.
And at first, it's actually quite nice. Because, they want a picture of me, you know?
Yeah.
And then you think, oh, God, I've got no makeup on.
Yeah.
I only want to go to the shop. It was so big when it first went on TV that you're just not ready for it. And now when I look at social media and all the reality TV stars, they earn a fortune through their Instagram posts. They get paid per post, paid per what they sell, and they now have to put ad on their thing, you know, whatever they're selling, and the youngsters now want to be them. And I find it quite unfortunate, because when you look at the people from maybe Love Island, say 3 years ago, nobody knows who they are anymore.
Yeah.
And they can't cope with that one minute they can't walk down the street, and then the next Love Island comes in and they're forgotten. It's because you've got the new winner and they become the person. And I think that's why suicide's so high. And I think these youngsters need to look at getting a proper job with some proper training, because I do believe at some point the Instagram bubble will burst. I don't know how, I don't know when, but I just think it's just going to be a whole feed of adverts, and people will stop looking at it.
Yeah, that's interesting. Actually, it's going that way. Yeah, isn't it?
Very much so.
It's 15 minutes of fame, isn't it? But it's even longer than that now. And yes, you know, all these reality shows, you know, don't get a decent job, or don't educate yourself to get a job. Just go on the TV, get your bits out, and you're going to become famous. And there is that whole thing behind it, you know, having your picture taken, people coming up to, you know, other people in the street, or can I have your autograph? And as you said, then another person comes along, which the media all around, and the original person gets completely forgotten about. You know, and they're kind of like left on the shelf. And then they have to deal with that massive adjustment of being super famous for a very short amount of time, and then nobody wants to know. And they've got nothing to fall back on to go and, you know, get a job that pays good money, or whatever they want to do. They've got nothing to fall back on. And the way the society's going now, so many young kids, they just want to be famous. I want to go on Instagram, I want to do this, I want to, you know, post a video on TikTok. But there's no substance to it. But try telling a younger person that. We can sit here and say that because we're older and we've got life experiences. But when you're being bombarded with those images constantly, 24/7, it's pretty tough to not look at it and go, oh, actually I could do that,
yeah,
and become famous.
You can see why it's an attractive option.
Absolutely.
Can't you?
Yeah, and they do earn a lot of money. They get some, you know, a right product that they, you know, they post it, and, you know, particularly with girls, you know, semi-dressed, they get more likes. And it just adds, the company who they're promoting is like happy with it. They're getting, you know, 50,000 likes and 5,000 comments and all of this. And then, so they get paid, and they get another little job. But then what happens? You know, then you get a product that's not so good. So you don't get paid anything.
Yeah.
Because you haven't got, unless, you know, you're semi-naked.
Some people have said, you know, there's a criticism of that whole thing with people, of influencers, and people saying, yeah, but where's the talent? Where's the skill in that? But I guess the argument for that, you could say the same about, to a certain, I don't want to say the wrong thing here, but you know, to a certain extent, when you're looking at any kind of modelling, if you like, yes. when we're talking about the young pretty girls that are posting photos of themselves in bikinis, let's say, or hair products or makeup products, things to do with their looks, and people go, oh, look at that bikini, that's gorgeous. They don't necessarily buy the bikini because they want to look like them. They just think it's a nice bikini. I've done it myself. I've bought products because I've thought, oh, that looks nice. I'd like to get that. Is there anything wrong with that? Is that their talent, that they're beautiful and they can sell products because of the way they look?
I think, yeah. I mean, maybe it is because of the explosion of social media. Mm. Because it's very easy to put yourself out there in the public domain where, you know, 10 years ago it wasn't. You know, you could be the most beautiful girl in the world. You wouldn't get noticed.
Mm.
But now it's like, put your picture up, get your followers up, then get companies involved. Is that your talent? Yeah, because it's probably hard work for them. Because I was with somebody from Love Island 2 Christmases ago in London. And after we had dinner, there was a few of us. She went in the corner with her phone, which had lights all around it, and had someone there. Literally was taking picture after picture. I'm thinking, my God, that's hard work. Then they go through all the editing, then the filters all on them, and then it's an hour later, you post something. So it is like work.
Yeah, oh yeah,
because
it's not
they
just
want
a quick,
the actual perfect look. And I think I'll just take the picture and post it long, do you know?
Yeah,
exactly. You're not happy, smiling, post it.
Yeah, yeah. No, but there is a massive amount of effort that goes
massive.
In.
Massive. It's huge.
Yeah. Yeah.
Huge.
It's an interesting subject. We better take a break.
Hannah Murray, TRE in the afternoon.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Women Talk. With me in the studio today is Lena Hodgkins, Sheila Meller and Cookie Baudet. There's an article about slapping bottoms. The article says there's never an excuse for bottom slapping. I wondered if you agreed with that statement or not. Whether we're talking amongst friends or in the workplace or a stranger... bottom slapping.
I don't think you can go up to a stranger and slap their bottom. I mean, it's just not on, is it? I think, again, it's a bit of that world gone mad. Years ago, if someone just slapped your bottom, it wasn't offensive.
Right.
I would actually find it offensive now.
Interesting. Okay.
I just don't think that people should touch you unless they're invited to do so.
Yeah, okay.
However... when you're out and maybe had a few drinks, you might see someone, you might go, hi, how are you? And slap their bottom, but it'd be another female.
Right.
So it's more of a friendly thing. But I think if it's a male, then I think it's a no-go.
Okay. Interesting.
I had a situation in one of the schools where I was head teacher with one of my governors, who was an elderly gentleman who... used to walk around the classrooms a lot. The kids absolutely adored him, and was always tapping bottoms, not of children, staff.
Of the female staff?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I had to have words with him several times, but one of the staff really took massive offence, and it became a real issue. You know, we had to go to tribunal. It was really,
wow.
really serious. I tried to get her to see that it was... from his point of view, really harmless, and it was just a little tap, but she was just so offended.
Yeah, see, I think in that environment, it's totally inappropriate. I don't think there's an excuse for it in that kind of environment at all. Yeah. But I understand what Lena's saying. I mean, obviously, we've seen this a lot in the news, the whole Me Too movement. Mm. You know, a lot of people say, oh, it was different then. Obviously, it depends what we're talking about. But if we're talking just about bottom slapping... I agree. I think maybe it used to happen a lot more. Mm. It used to be more normal and more accepted, a bit kind of jovial, a bit cheeky. But now I think, not just because of the Me Too movement, but I think now it's more widely accepted by both men and women that it's not appropriate.
No. He had to step down as a governor. He couldn't carry on. And it was a shame because he was such an asset in lots of other ways.
Yeah.
But another little story in the 70s, when I was kind of in my wild days, I was in a club this one particular evening, and I really fancied this guy. He was gorgeous, and he had the most amazing bottom.
I wonder what you're going to say.
He was leaning over the bar this one particular evening, and I went past and tapped it, and then was horrified that I'd done it. I couldn't believe that I'd done it. And he turned around and he was really, really offended.
Was he?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
I think he'd
never said, I absolutely blew it, you know. With him.
Yeah.
<I'll learn> me.
Yeah. It depends who's doing the slapping at the end of the day, but
okay.
I'm against it. I think that's just total invasion of somebody's personal space. And yeah, as girlfriends, when you see your girlfriends, you know, you might, give them a cheeky slap, but that's allowed between your friends. If that's accepted between your group of friends, then there's no stepping over boundaries. But if it's a complete stranger or a colleague or a work associate that, you know, for me, they'd get a slap around the face.
That's just crossing
that boundary.
Because it's the bottom, isn't it? It's private. You know, it's one thing, even in a work point of view, if a colleague touches you on the back or on the arm, you know, some people are more kind of touchy-feely than others. And I find myself sometimes when chatting with people, sometimes just kind of lean over and touch their arm or something. But I feel the arm is very different to the bottom, isn't it?
It really is
kind of crossing the line from just being friendly to almost sexual, the kind of sexual connotations of it, instead of just a friendly kind of tap on the arm. On the bottom, it's like, no, that's a different thing, isn't it?
But I mean, why would a man want a complete stranger that you've just met or someone you've just met want to, why is it acceptable for that stranger to actually touch your bottom? It's not acceptable.
No,
you wouldn't allow them to touch your breast, would you?
No, exactly.
So you,
and presumably they're touching your bottom because they're thinking, that's a nice bottom. And again, as soon as you start thinking of the person that you think, well, no, I don't want him to be looking at my bottom or touching it.
It's totally unacceptable.
Yeah.
I really think it's totally unacceptable. You shouldn't ever touch anybody that closely in that area unless, you're very good friends with them or it's accepted between you two and you're okay with it.
Mm.
But randoms or work colleagues or anything like that... I'm the same. If someone, work colleague or a random, I would turn around and slap the face for doing it because it's just not acceptable.
Mm. Yeah. Okay. Moving on to, I don't know if you saw this on the news, I think it was last week, the Labour MP Stella Creasy was given an official warning for taking her three-month-old son into Westminster Hall debate. It was last Tuesday. She argued that she had to bring him to work as MPs are not entitled to maternity cover and called for a rule change to make parenting and politics possible to mix. So I think clearly she was doing it to make a statement, wasn't she, about that, first of all. But it really got me thinking about if and when it is ever appropriate or okay to bring your baby to work.
No. I had a lady working in the next office to me, and she had a baby and didn't have childcare. And while I was trying to work, this baby screamed all day.
Oh,
literally,
no.
All day. And I shut the door and I say, this can't go on.
No.
I understand what the lady that, you know, in Westminster, if they don't give them maternity leave, then they need to sort that out.
Yeah.
100% they need to sort that out because that's wrong on every level.
Yeah.
And women should have at least 6 months maternity leave and then try to find appropriate childcare. I think if it's a one-off, you know, they've got to pick their child up from school or nursery because they're ill or something and they've got work to do, then you can bring them into the office, sit them down, you know, and classify them, and it's fine as a one-off. But every day, because you've got to be aware of what else is around you, that you can't work with the baby screaming, I don't think it's a great environment for the baby either.
No.
So
I felt very ambiguous about it when I first read that article, because I'm all for women being able to have the same rights as men, and I don't think that men would even think about bringing a baby into work and be in that same situation. But the more I thought about it, when I've actually had to manage people, I don't think I could have managed if some of my staff had wanted to bring their baby into the classroom, because it'd be totally inappropriate.
Mm.
And probably exactly the same as bringing a baby into the House of Commons. Okay, that baby slept during that whole debate that she led, but what if it hadn't have slept?
Yes. That you can't promise that it will.
But again, I think it is down to the fact that they don't give maternity leave. I think that's what she's trying to highlight.
Mm.
And I was really surprised that somewhere like the House of Commons don't provide a creche.
I
wouldn't have been able to go to university if they hadn't provided a creche for my child, because I was a single parent.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, I
so
think
it's
she's
interesting.
Yeah, I think she's made a good point with that, definitely. But yeah, I can't see of an environment where it would be okay to bring a baby to work.
I think it's too much of a distraction for the co-workers and also for the mother who's actually brought their child into work.
Yeah.
Because you're at work, it's a professional environment, you're meant to be working, yet you are potentially going to be distracted by your child.
Yeah.
So then you are not giving your focus to your job. And yes, companies should provide a creche, you know, so parents can, whether they're male or female, can bring their child in. You know, you might have a single dad that's looking after a child, and they should be allowed, if there's a creche in the facilities, to then perhaps bring that child to work when they're struggling.
Mm.
But an everyday thing to bring your baby to work, no.
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 We agree on that. We'll take the last break.
Hannah Murray, TRE in the afternoon.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the last part of Women Talk. With me in the studio today is Lena Hodgkins, Sheila Meller and Cookie Baudet. There was an article that I saw earlier in the week and then I lost the article, but I remembered the bulk of the headline, which I thought was an interesting point of discussion. Less than 40% of Brits say I love you to their partner every day. And I don't know about you, but I looked at that and I thought, OK, I don't really see anything wrong with that. I definitely don't tell my husband that I love him every day, I don't think. But almost, to be fair. But I was just trying to think about love and ways of showing love, because some people, words mean everything. And other people, it's more about physical affection. For other people, it's more about actions and them kind of doing things around the house. Even for others, it's about buying presents. So I just thought it was interesting to talk about how you like to be shown love, if you like.
Myself and my husband, I mean, when I'm going, leaving home, so I've just lost my brain, I can't speak. It's filled with love, that's why. When I leave to go to work, I always say to my husband, love you, see you later. But I show my love through my cooking. I love feeding him. I love cooking, full stop.
Yeah.
But he doesn't realise, and we spoke about this the other day, when he's eating, he makes little noises when he's really enjoying it. And for me to hear that, and that I've cooked that food and he's eating it, for me, it's so satisfying, and I know he loves my cooking. But yeah, I mean, we tell each other we love each other all the time.
Yeah.
And we've been married 17 years.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, so, yeah, I like to be told.
Yeah.
I show it in lots of other ways, because I'm a very kind of out there kind of, you know, giving kind of person, and I show love a lot, but I also like to say it and hear it.
Yeah. Yeah, I forgot about that kind of casual, bye, I love you. Mm. I probably do it every day then. I was just thinking more of a kind of I love you type of moment, and I was thinking, no, that doesn't... But definitely, yeah, bye, I love you. Yeah, yeah, when I speak to him on the phone, I probably almost every time says, bye, I love you. Yeah, okay.
Well, I haven't got a partner, so... Do I think it's a good thing? I think some of it is said and there's no sincerity with it.
Yeah.
And it's said as a habit. Bye, yeah. I love you.
Yeah, exactly.
See you later, I love you. Do they actually mean it? I don't know.
Yeah.
I do.
Yes.
But is it habit, you know, because you've always done it, I love you, and you could have just, you know... actually really dislike him at that point for whatever reason. You still say, yeah, I love you. I don't know. I think there's insincerity with it.
Yeah. Mm. I know what you mean when it becomes habit. If you always say it at the end of a phone call, it's just like saying bye.
Bye,
I love you. It's just part of your bye process, isn't it? As a
But I'm the wrong person to ask because I don't have a partner.
No, it's an interesting one, though. Because some people say it's about presents. And I always think, oh,
No.
Okay, we all agree on that. True love is having a joint bank account, this article said. Couples who have joint bank accounts are more likely to stay together because they don't fall out about money as much. I couldn't disagree more.
I disagree.
Yeah. I've been married before.
Yeah.
And we had joint bank accounts.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I'm divorced. Got divorced from him, of this month's second husband. And we don't have joint bank accounts.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been married to him longer than the first one.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah. I had a joint bank account with an ex, and I don't with my husband. And that works a lot better.
Yeah.
I think your joint bank account, it's fine if you have one, your bills go through, that's your bill money, your household money and whatever. But you really do need to keep your own, because if you're buying a present, you know what each other's spent on each other and stuff. I think it's like awkward.
Mm.
But if you have your own money and you can do your own thing with, or if you want to go and buy a really expensive dress or something, think, well, it's like ours rather than mine.
Exactly.
Do I have to ask when it really is your money as well? But I do think for household things, I think that's fine. But for all your personal stuff, I think it should be separate.
Mm.
I agree totally.
Yeah.
I think you should have a joint bank account for all household things and then have your
separate
own.
Ones.
Or even, you know, a joint bank account and me have my own.
As long as you're sorted, yeah. So we'll end on a low, the headline says, we've been married 47 years, but I still can't use the loo when my husband's in the house. And the woman in question is just one of scores of readers, all women who shared their experience of, it's actually got a name, shy bowel syndrome. who literally don't want to go to the loo while their partners are around.
I think that's absolutely bizarre, because you're a couple, you've been together 43 years, you know literally each other inside out.
Yeah.
You know, you always obviously would have had intimate relations with that person,
mm-hmm.
yet you feel uncomfortable going to the bathroom. They're not in the bathroom with you.
No.
The door is closed.
Yeah.
You know, and they could be in the garden far away. but to wait for your partner to physically leave the house before... I feel sorry for that woman.
Yeah.
I really feel sorry for that woman. She must have some very bad stomach aches.
She must be able to control her bowels amazingly well.
It's bizarre.
I wouldn't be able to do that.
It's bizarre, isn't it? Really bizarre.
I wonder why.
Yeah.
I just don't know.
I guess embarrassment, I suppose.
I get it. And with a new partner. I don't know.
First week or something.
Yeah. But 43 years, and like you say, you know, they've had intimate relations. Well, you'd assume so.
Mm.
It makes you wonder when comments like that she can't go to the bathroom while her husband's in the house. Well, he does. So why can't she? I find that's just the most bizarre thing ever.
Mm.
I think she probably needs some therapy. It's okay to use the loo.
It reminds me of, I'm sure it was in Sex and the City, when one of the women, probably the Sarah Jessica Parker character, Carrie Bradshaw, I think she was nervous about farting in front of her partner, and it reminded me of that, thinking of that. Because again, when you're, can't believe I'm talking about this on the radio. Easy to forget with women talk, we just have a little chat. Especially at the beginnings of the relationship, you're that's the kind of thing that makes you nervous, doesn't it? You don't want to do that.
Yeah.
Don't want to put someone on.
But then
please someone else speak.
Once you've literally torn down that wall, then it is a free-for-all, you know? And you feel... And the thing is, you shouldn't feel uncomfortable in front of your partner.
No.
This is your life partner, your husband or your wife. You know, whoever it is, whether it's girl, boy, but I don't care, you know. But this is the person that you share a bed with.
Mm.
You have deep, meaningful... your life is with that person. And there's certain things you feel that you can't do with them. That's, I just find that a little bit strange.
Mm. Yeah. Do you think it's different then if you're with someone who you're, is not going to be a life partner and you're just having a kind of romantic, passionate affair with? Would you be a bit more discreet in that sort of situation?
Yeah, I think so, because, you know, it is a personal thing.
Mm.
So you don't really want to, someone that you've maybe just met, hear you go to the loo.
No.
Although I'm sure men don't seem to bother about it.
No.
So they probably wouldn't take any notice, but I think it's for your own thing.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to hear it.
Makes you wonder, know. Doesn't it?
Yeah, whether, it does make you wonder,
whether,
yeah.
whether they think it or whether it's just in
inside your
in
own
your head. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I didn't think I'd be going into that much detail. No one heard. It's fine. Thank you all very much for coming in today. Lena Hodgkins, Sheila Meller and Cookie Baudet. Lovely to see you all. Have
you.
A great weekend.
Thank you, Hannah.
And
thank you, Hannah.
How are you doing?
Thank you.
And coming up after the news is Bob James with Spain Today. And I will be back on Monday. Yes, 3-day week for me. Let's just have a look and see who we've got coming up on Monday. Ingrid Jansen is on talking about decluttering in time for Christmas. I always love having her on. She was the one who got me into decluttering. So if you haven't done it yet, Bob, make sure you're listening on Monday.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this program, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.